We humans like to keep most other species at a distance. Lions, tigers, giraffes, not in the house, please. But for a select few species, we deliberately open the door and invite them inside. I'm talking pets. Specifically, for the next hour, dog tails, good dogs, blind dogs, singing dogs, and shelter dogs. And just for your dog, as a special treat, we'll be giving a cat a bath. From NPR, I'm Barrett Golding of Hearing Voices, the best of public radio. Producer Scott Carrier of Salt Lake City made this recording in Afghanistan. He also records dogs closer to home.
It was noon, and I was in the Green River Bar in Daniel, Wyoming. I was the only customer. I'd been floating down the Green River in a canoe, but the wind started blowing so hard, I was just getting pinned against the shore. I saw this town, Daniel, and figured I'd hole up until the wind died down. The bartender was an older woman. She was washing glasses left over from the night before. A German shepherd lay asleep on the concrete floor. On the mirror behind the bar were photos of the woman throwing a frisbee to the dog. To make conversation, I said, "I see your dog likes to catch the frisbee." She said, "He sure does, don't you, Fritz? You love playing catch." Fritz picked his head up off the floor and looked at her. "I used to know a shepherd that was crazy about the frisbee," I said, "but his hips went bad and he had to stop. Broke his heart." "Fritz has good hips," she said, "but he had an eye disease called pannus that attacks the corneas. It got worse and worse, and finally we had to have his eyeballs removed." "He's blind?" "He doesn't have any eyes," she said, "so yes, he's blind." "He must miss catching the frisbee," I said. "No," she said, smiling. "He still plays catch. Those photos were taken after his operation." I didn't believe it, so she offered to show me.
Well, I'm Pat Walker, and we're in Daniel, Wyoming. We're in our front yard, but it doesn't matter where we might be, because this dog likes to play with his frisbee. Yes, you love showing off, don't you? Good dog.
The way they did it was Fritz would run in a circle about 10 feet in diameter, and Pat stood back about another 10 feet, and when Fritz came around, she'd throw it. Fritz would jump up and try to catch it.
Good dog.
Sometimes he'd catch it, sometimes he didn't.
Oop, my fault.
Even though it was choreographed, Pat didn't always throw it at the same time. She didn't always throw it in the same place.
Okay. Good dog.
It was amazing.
This is the way he always played. See, this is how he played when he was sighted. And then I could look back, but it wasn't awfully long till he finally caught it once. He wanted us to do it. And we, of course, he'd miss and miss and miss. But he didn't get tired of it. And so we just kept going until he caught it. And like I say, if I've been good at it, why, I've had him catch it up to 50 times without missing. His life is very full. He does everything he did before. A little slower, maybe. And he takes some bad knocks, but not too many anymore.
So how do you think he does it? How does he know?
He hears, because see, like when that car came by, then he blows it. Good dog. Come to me. Yeah, can you calm down now? Why don't you lie down for a minute? No, lie down. Fritz, down. Lie down just for a minute. Here, lie down. Come on.
What's it like living here, out here?
Wonderful. Here by choice. And besides this wonderfully beautiful country, why, I've always said I didn't know whether I love the people or the country most. Pretty special.
And while Pat was talking to me, she wasn't throwing the frisbee, and Fritz was getting impatient. He was standing there between us, and I was holding the microphone up to Pat, and suddenly he jumped up and bit down on the end of the microphone.
Oh, Fritz, easy. Oh.
He thought the microphone was the frisbee. I don't know how else to explain it, and even then I can't explain how he knew to bite that spot. Microphones don't make sound, they record sound, although it never worked very well after that. A dent in the metal screen. Now it sits on my bookshelf with a 1,000-year-old arrowhead, a photo of an Eskimo in a kayak, and some rocks from Yellowstone Lake. Sometimes I show it to people. See this dent? It was made by the tooth of a blind German shepherd who thought it was a frisbee. This is Scott Carrier.
My dog Charger was one of those big, goofy dogs that carries a log around all day. A mutt with claims to all 7 dog groups. You know, the kind of dog that would have joined the army for the food. He never saved my life, or if he did, he never let on that he had. But when he passed away, man, I grieved buckets. So when my girlfriend Mary said she found a puppy, I told her, I'm not ready, Mary. Nevertheless, there stood Fafner, a dachshund, a wiener dog. I looked at the floor next to him. I says, who did that? Oh, she says, it looks like he had a little accident. I look around the house and there's more accidents than a liquor store parking lot. I look at Fafner, and I know you're not supposed to anthropomorphize dogs, but that face was definitely Lutheran guilt. Mary says, he's special. He's a show dog. He has papers and everything. A show dog? No, my mind flashes to those dogs that resemble cleaning implements, perfume, powdered and pampered dogs the color of marshmallows and a box of Lucky Charms. I remember seeing a bumper sticker once that read, please don't tell my mother you saw me at a dog show. She thinks I play piano at a whorehouse. Mary says, why don't you get to know him? So Fafner and I go out for a walk, and I learn when people see a dachshund, they have to yell, a wiener dog, like a rainbow, a Shriner, a shooting star, a clown, a nudist colony, busloads of children going by, a wiener dog. And as we pass my local motorcycle coffee shop, I am waiting for the taunts and jeers, references to Fafner as foodstuffs for their larger dogs, when a leather-clad man named Zach steps up and says, nice dog. I say, what? Yeah, he says, that's a good-looking dog. Really? Yeah, good confirmation. Huh, yeah, and he says, and there's nothing that'll go through a sack full of rats faster than a dachshund. Wow, now the guys are looking with new reverence, and I decide it's best to get Fafner out of there before one of them says, hey, I happen to have a sack full of rats at home. When I get home, I ask Mary, hey, Mary, when is that next dog show? And before you know it, I got more leashes than belts. I got a house full of wiener dog doormats, gravy boats, knick-knack, bric-a-brac, call me what you will. But when I put on a pair of pants, there is liver in one pocket and plastic bags in another. I gotta admit, I got it bad, but it is not entirely my fault. Dogs have been an intricate part of our culture from the mother of Romulus and Remus to Scooby-Doo. To some extent, they're our creation. We've bred them to carry our burdens, guard our loved ones, hunt, herd, entertain. In ancient Egypt, the white on the chest of the pharaoh hound was encouraged to reflect the light of the moon for hunting at night. Long ears and wrinkles of bloodhounds are designed to hold scent. Some dogs were bred to keep queens warm on cold nights. Chihuahuas, much misunderstood by our culture, were revered by the Aztecs to lead you across the great river that divides this life from the hereafter. In a very deep place, I feel that's where Charger waits for me now, in the smoking lounge, hanging out with a bunch of chihuahuas. I remember a little prayer that goes, please, Lord, make me the man my dog thinks I am. Ain't it the truth? When the world turned on Nixon, he turned to checkers. We can learn a lot from dogs. Loyalty, how to properly welcome someone home. There's words in the American Kennel Club show manual. They refer to dachshunds, but I think they are words to live by. It says, scars achieved in battle will not count against contestants. Now that's got to make you feel better about yourself.
And that was Kevin Kling from his CD, Stories Off the Shallow End. Stephen Vitiello made some audio art out of dog barks in his piece Dogs in the Yard. And Scott Carrier told us about a blind dog. This is Hearing Voices, and we're giving the dogs their day. Do dogs have souls, emotions, creativity? I think the people who ask these questions probably don't have dogs, or maybe much soul, emotion, or creativity. Because all three are obvious in your own dog. In their personality, even in their dreams. At least that's what people told producer Jay Allison in 1984 when he asked them about dog dreams.
Doggy. Woof, woof. Woof.
Do you want to hear a story about dogs?
Yeah.
This one's called Playful Puppy. Who wants to be left home alone? Not I, said the puppy. I want to have fun. There's lots to be done outside. He climbed out of his basket, even though he'd been told very sternly to stay in it. Do you ever do that?
Yeah.
The puppy knew just where to find the hole in the screen door, and out he went.
Come here. Come on. Hey. Hey.
The dog doesn't think about the past or the future. I think a dog lives more in the present.
Why do you think dogs sleep so much?
So they can dream.
I do think they have dreams, yes. I think they have a lot of running and chasing dreams, because lots of times you'll observe their feet moving.
They run in their sleep.
Mark has good dreams about chasing chipmunks or rabbits.
Up a simmon tree. Blue looked the possum looked at me, saying, go on, Blue.
Next time we race, I'll catch up with you, panted the puppy. The puppy was hot and thirsty from all that racing and chasing. He
Look
saw...
at Mama.
What's that?
Huh? Playful puppy.
Mm-hmm. Where's the puppy? What's happening?
Closing.
Closing what?
His eyes.
What's the puppy doing there?
Yawning.
You want to hear the story of why dogs sleep by the fire?
They're not, because they want to eat food.
I know, but at one time they were wild, and there was a little bit of
dog
food left over.
Dog saw the woman feed her child with mush.
They gave it to
then
the
she
dog,
scraped the pot and, the dog and gave the mush to dog. Dog stayed there and did not go back into the bush with Jackal. Now he lives with people and eats mush and sleeps by the fire.
They're not really asleep. They're sort of like dozing.
Sometimes, as Buck was in half sleep there by the fire, it seemed that the flames were of another fire, and the man beside him, another and different man. The other man did not stand erect, but with trunk inclined forward from the hips. On his body there was much hair matted into a thick fur. This man uttered strange sounds and seemed very much afraid of the darkness. About his body was a quick alertness as of one who lived in perpetual fear of things seen and unseen. And Buck was beside him at the fire. Buck whimpered in his sleep.
I don't think they have a thought in their mind. Not when they're dozing.
Do you ever dream about dogs? Have you ever had any dreams or nightmares about dogs that you can think of?
No.
Well, there's hellhounds, which are these dogs. I guess they can breathe fire. Kind of, they go... And I think they're only located in hell, but I'm not sure. I've never met one. I don't think I want to either.
She heard a slight sound at the window that made her heart jump. In seconds, Wooly was back in the kitchen with the window closed behind him. In the firelight, she could see a strange, wild gleam in his eyes, and his jaws and snowy breast were dashed with fresh blood. Oh, Wooly, oh no, she cried. His eyes gleamed and his mane bristled, but he cowered under her gaze and groveled on the floor as though begging for mercy. Slowly he crawled nearer and nearer as if to lick her feet until quite close. Then with the fury of a tiger, but without a sound, he sprang for her throat.
Playful puppy.
What do you suppose a dog's nightmare might be? I mean, if we have bad dreams about dogs turning on us or losing faithfulness, do you figure a dog has the same kind of dream? Is that what he would lose sleep over?
Dogs. These are dog heads here. Ogun loves the dog blood. This brings his power to full force.
She has nightmares, we know that, because she wakes up shaking a lot.
Shaky. And we'll run over to her when we see this. And... You know, put our arms around
her. Just put your hand on her head or Or just pet her and
calm
she stops.
Her down and say, shh.
Yeah, she just stops.
One person can do it, two people can do it even easier. If it's one person, that one person holds it down and cuts the neck off. It's just the life force that we're interested in. Okay?
The bullet is actually pre-fragmented. It just flies to pieces when it strikes. The test that the most meaningful medium I know of is actual flesh. We've done it on dogs. You know, they're dead. But, I mean, say 120, 130 good-sized dogs.
I mean, these dogs have a lot of nightmares.
When you do an autopsy,
I mean, we see them shaking in their sleep.
It's nothing. You reach in there and it's goo. It's paste. There's nothing. I mean, no blood, nothing.
The dog doesn't think about the past or the future. I think a dog lives more in the present.
Fear of things seen and unseen.
They can be content because they don't know anything different.
Buck whimpered in his sleep.
John Hoyland, and I've worked all my life on ranching and stuff and still at it. And the dog is Nippy. And I've had him since he was a little pup. But it is kind of amazing on when you play the accordion that he will try to, you know, match up the tone on it. I've been doing it all my life, and from the time I was big enough so you could, you know, be able to walk around and anywhere from herding sheep to then they went into the cattle at later years and started in with horses to do the work originally, and then later on you've got a first an iron wheel tractor, and then you got a rubber tire tractor, and then got rid of the horses and do it all with the mechanical end of things. Well, it's been pretty poor here lately in the last few years, but like it is, you just keep on working, and maybe it's a better life than being around. You can look and see what the world is doing a little better than nature's doing. But the only thing in with the ranching deal, you can never know when you're going to be sure you're through with the day's work. That's one thing that don't... There's no use figuring on it, because if you figure it all down, it's going to do it. It's not going to come out that way. But the main thing is, like I said, on your deal when things was going along and everything is pretty and quiet and you're not getting soaked, you're not freezing to death, and things is all working along on that one evening or so, or in the morning if it's nice and everything, for what the things that didn't quite go the right way, that's your enjoyment out of your farming end and ranching. Anyways, it comes along on there. It's still quite nifty. The main thing is to have a dog that will stick with you whenever you go on out, and then you take and be out there haying or out there farming or out there fencing, having puddle off a ways, but when he come back, or you get quite a ways from where you leave him on the deal, and you come back and wonder if he run off and went home a half mile when you're working, and then your dog is sitting there waiting underneath the pickup or truck or whatever you drove out to the field. That makes the best of the day. Yeah, I would say I'm pretty lucky.
That's my friend John Hoyland and his dog Nippy, recorded at their ranch in Big Timber, Montana. Jay Allison's Dog Dreams was produced with Christina Egloff for their series Animals and Other Stories, with funds from the New York State Council for the Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Coming up, dogs in the air, in the streets, and yes, dog, we'll be giving that cat a bath. That's in a minute, when we return with Dog Tales on Hearing Voices.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.
I'm Barrett Golding of Hearing Voices, and we're still wagging those dog tails. In 1945, Tony Schwartz began documenting life in sound. He recorded New York City cab drivers, French folk songs, kids' street games. He made 10,000 field recordings all over the world. It's an oral history of the way we sound.
You have to sign an application here, and you go in and look at the dogs, and you select something you see, and you come out, and you sign a release on it.
So in February 1956, when he went to a New York City animal shelter to get himself a dog,
look the dogs over, and
he recorded
it. You select, you tell them that's the dog you want.
Now, this is a wire hair terrier cross. He's about 2 months. He was brought in here by a lady that couldn't keep him in the house. There were some restrictions there. So she brought him in, and I'm pretty sure we'll get a home for him very soon.
He taped himself and his new terrier trying to get home.
5 West 57.
Sorry, sir. We don't take dogs in this cab.
And he continued to tape for an entire year. Everything, vets, pet shops.
If you want to housebreak the dog, I would suggest some scent that we have here.
The result was a record album, A Dog's Life, released in 1958, recorded by Tony Schwartz.
It's called Fireplug. Very good, very good.
Tony, if the dog makes Wee-Wee in the house, if you have to make him housebroken, you have to slap him with a newspaper. Then if he doesn't do it again, he's housebroken.
I see. And if he does it again, what do?
You slap him again and put him out. And then if he does it the next time, slap him out and do the same thing. But if he doesn't do it the next time, he's housebroken.
All dogs owned or harbored in the city of New York must be licensed regardless of the age. You must purchase a license as long as you harbor a dog. The license costs $3 per year. The dog year is from May the 1st until April the 30th of the following year.
Dog. The dog trots freely in the street and sees reality. And the things he sees are bigger than himself. And the things he sees are his reality.
drunks in doorways, moons on trees. The dog trots freely through the street, and the things he sees are smaller than himself. Fish on newsprint, ants in holes, chickens in Chinatown windows, their heads a block away. The dog trots freely in the street, and the things he smells smell something like himself. The dog trots freely in the street, past puddles and babies, cats and cigars, pool rooms and policemen. He doesn't hate cops, he merely has no use for them. He goes past them and past the dead cows hung a pole in front of the San Francisco meat market. He would rather eat a tundra cow than a tough policeman, though either might do. And he goes past the Romeo Ravioli factory and past Coit's Tower and past Congressman Doyle of the Un-American Committee. He's afraid of Coit's Tower, but he's not afraid of Congressman Doyle, although what he hears is very discouraging, very depressing, very absurd to a sad young dog like himself, to a serious dog like himself. But he has his own free world to live in, his own fleas to eat. He will not be muzzled. Congressman Doyle is just another fire hydrant to him. The dog trots freely in the street and has his own dog's life to live and to think about and to reflect upon, touching and tasting and testing everything, investigating everything without benefit of perjury. A real realist with a real tale to tell and a real tale to tell it with. A real live barking democratic dog engaged in real free enterprise with something to say about ontology, something to say about reality and how to see it and how to hear it. With his head cocked sideways at street corners as if he is always just about to have his picture taken for Victor Records, listening for his master's voice, and looking like a living question mark into the gray gramophone of puzzling existence with its wondrous hollow horn, which always seems just about to spout forth some victorious answer to everything.
From examining your dog, it appears that she has a false pregnancy, or technically a pseudocyesis. This occurs in people, and many folks feel that such a thing does not occur in dogs. However, it is very common, particularly so in city dogs. She hides in closets and under the bed and makes a nest. If there are dolls or toys about, she accepts these as her puppies and nurses them and hides them and fondles them and so forth. And it's really a strange syndrome. We have been able to treat this very successfully from two aspects, from the hormonal aspect by giving female hormones. The psychic aspects have been brought under control very, very nicely with these newer tranquilizing drugs that they're using in people now, such as Miltown, Equinil, etc.
That's Tony Schwartz's vet from the 1956 recording A Dog's Life. And Lawrence Ferlinghetti read his poem Dog with music by Dana Colley from A Coney Island of the Mind. You are listening to Hearing Voices. This sweet-sounding dog lover is Canada's Jane Seabury.
crazy, it's a funny smell, the mouse. I hate it when he does it, I feel so dumb. What I say, everything reminds me of my dog. Beautiful things remind me of my dog. Sunsets remind me of my dog. Go to your window, Einstein reminds me of my dog. I want a badger's fluffy hair. This whole world reminds me of my dog. My dog reminds me of this whole world. Do I remind you of a dog? I do.
I figured I'd use the name Louie.
My dog's name is Capers. I named him after a horse, which we have.
My dog's name is Boo-Boo. Boo-Boo the Woodlands, and her name came from our place in the country, plus the fact of Boo-Boo is known as chocolate, and that's her color. And my other poodle, which is the same color, and she's called Jolly of Jura.
Well, she's a little broad in the beam. So we named her Fanny.
Sir Lancelot. That was his pedigree name. Of course, it's been shortened. He's Lance now. Or Lancey, as the case may be.
Lucky?
How'd you name him?
Some neighbors said, oh, what a lucky little dog to have in such a nice home. Oh, I says, that's enough. Lucky's his name. I says, have it luck. I wanted to give him a different name, but she gave him Lucky. Can't win from a woman. No, it's Lucky. I wanted to call him Buster or something like that, but he's a nice-looking animal.
His name is Hollyhouse Philippe, the real French name, so we call him Flip Flop.
What is his name again?
Hollyhouse Philippe. We call him Flip Flop.
Peppy. Well, we first bought him from Gimbel's. He looked like he was more dead than alive, and he laid there in a corner, so I just figured he has no life at all. We just call him Peppy, figuring that maybe someday he'll grow up to have a little life.
Sinbad. He's a child of sin, and so we call him Sinbad. Button, because he's as cute as a button.
Timothy O'Tara.
Finian's Rainbow.
George.
Demitas.
We called her Susie.
Only dog I had was when I was a young kid. It was during the time that Lindbergh's baby got killed. My father got me that dog. I think he named him Bruno. He did name him Bruno. Then my father had his tail cut off, and I don't know why, but I never cared for him after that. The dog, I mean. My father tried to explain it to me that that's what they do with all bird dogs, but I didn't want to hear it. I was just a kid. I haven't had a dog since. I don't know why. I like dogs. But I always thought it was a shame to have the dog's tail cut off, and I lost all interest in him.
He's a cute dog. How come you didn't cut his tail?
I definitely think you ought to cut the tail.
Why?
Because you're spoiling the breed of the dog. The dog demands the tail be cut.
The dog demands?
Well, I mean the breed of the animal.
I see.
So
what do you mean by the breed?
Well, this is a wire hair. And all wire hairs have a short, clipped tail. And this is the only one floating around in New York City with a long tail.
You're spoiling the breed. All wire hairs have their tails clipped. You're spoiling the breed of the dog by not clipping its tail. His appearance, at any rate, it isn't standard for a wire hair to have a tail waving in the breeze. It isn't right for a wire hair to have a tail waving in the breeze.
I don't think it's very good to have their tails clipped, cause I think that they have enough of a tail, but if it gets too long, like when it's sad, I think, doesn't it go under their feet? Well, if it goes under their feet, it may drag along the ground, it may get dirty. And I know you can't clip it off and wash it, then hang it back on again.
I don't believe in clipping dogs' tails.
Why not?
Because they're born with those and they have a right to them. Why shouldn't they have them? Wagging the tail is smiling. And why take their smiles away from them? The wag of a dog's tail is a smile.
This is Seeing Is Believing. You're on the air. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, this is Laura.
Hi, Laura. Where are you calling from?
From Maine.
Great.
I want to know if my dog really loves me, or if, you know, it's just because I feed her. Like, I want to know, like, what animals really think. Is it love? I mean, does the dog feel feelings of love just for me, or is it just, you know?
Is it anybody who would feed the dog? Is it transferable?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I really think it's a very specific kind of love. And, you know, I don't own a dog, but I own a bird.
Yeah?
And I have said to the bird,
yeah,
I never thought I would ever love an animal as much as I love you.
Yes. And what did the bird say?
The bird says, hi, Nibbles.
Because that's all the bird can say.
That's all it can say. You know, it's kind of a mimic.
Do you think it was mocking you?
No, not.
Do you think when it repeats, when you say hi, Nibbles, and it says it back, that it's mocking you?
No.
here's what I wonder. If I were to die, do you think my dog would eat me? Because I had a bad cut on my hand a couple weeks ago, and I had to get stitches. And it kind of healed up, and there was, a lot of just sort of scabbiness and dead skin all around it. And I woke up one morning, and my dog was nibbling on it. Actually nibbling on it. And I started thinking, is she caring for my wound, or is she actually just, having a snack? I'm saying if she would eat me, she must not really love me.
Well, unless she
I
just
would
love
expect
you.
Her, if I was dead, to sit and just cry and cry.
Well, that's... that.
Instead, she might just start taking some nibbles.
No, but see, you're projecting a human emotion a dog, because I don't think dogs grieve the way people do.
Right.
I know.
I think they do.
You think they do grieve?
I think they grieve some sort of loss, but I don't think they're cognizant of it. I think they just feel something's missing and they're not happy.
But then they get hungry.
I have some problems with my dog.
We have what we hope is a very good answer to this. The ASPCA has training classes that they hold on Tuesday nights down at the Washington Irving Gymnasium. And you can take your dog down there, and he can learn how to walk to heel properly, how to come when you call him, and how to stay in one place.
What do I do? Do I just take him down there and leave him on Tuesday night?
No. In fact, the whole theory of our course is that we train you to train your dog. So we put you on the floor, we explain to you what to do, and then from then on, you train the dog.
For graduation, you know, your dogs are going to have to do a one-minute sit-stay and a three-minute down-stay. So you are only allowed to give one stay. If you have to give twice, that is failing according to AKC rules. Just give your hand signal and give your stay command and leave your dogs. Are everybody ready?
Stay.
One command, and they're supposed to hold that position for 1 minute. Well, that would be failing, of course, but you've got a long way to go yet. Now, last week, for the first night, you were allowed to say the word sit when the dogs came to a halt. Now, tonight, I don't want to hear the command. I will say halt, you say nothing. But if the dog doesn't sit, spank him down and then pat him with the same hand, giving praise. All right, ready? Forward. My heel. Good, fellow. Now, no command, halt, spank, pat them. Come, good fellas. Spank them down.
Now we're just getting silly. This music is by the Beetle Barkers. This is Hearing Voices, and we're telling dog tales. Two of them about a dog's tail. To clip or not to clip? That was the question posed by Tony Schwartz and in Another Bruno by David Greenberger with the band Three Leg Torso. David talks to elderly people, then tells their stories over music. This next one comes from a conversation he had with Dorothy Winnett. From his collection Whispers, Grins, Blood Loss, and Handshakes, here again is David Greenberger and Three Leg Torso.
I'm looking for a dog, but I thought I needed an older dog, because I can't give a young dog the exercise they need. I'm looking because I get very lonely, and I think if I had a dog, I wouldn't. They're great companions, uncritical, total love. I miss my dog very much. After I die, if I could come back, I think I'd like to come back as my dog. Of course, then I still wouldn't have my dog. I'd be the dog and not me. I guess I would be the dog and miss me then. You can't have it all.
Even though they're in a lot of trouble in the beginning when they're young, as the years go on, they mean so much to you that you forget all of the trouble when they were puppies. They are so wonderful. They eventually become just like a member of the family.
I love it. I mean, I didn't really mean to get one in New York, but one of those days I just decided to get one. I mean, no particular reason. It's a lot of work. I have to walk him 3 times a day, and it's quite a headache, but I think it's worth it.
You don't own the dog. The dog owns you. But a great many compensations. You have love and affection, something you never had before.
They're simpler to relate to at times than people. When you just want love and warmth and affection, they're there to give it to you.
I feel that the animal is part of me. I really do. Well, I don't consider doing anything for a little animal trouble. Look at that. Look at the way he's behaving now. Isn't that all worth the little trouble that you might go to? And the longer you have them, the more you wonder how on earth you did without them.
Oh, they're worth every hour of trouble that they ever give you, and more.
Well, our dog is getting older now, has trouble coming up the stairs. You gotta help him sometimes, 'cause his back legs, they wobble. Our dog is getting older now. We make him dog beds everywhere. You gotta help him stand so he doesn't topple. He's a pit bull, and he's not mean. He loves for the children to pat him on the head, and he still thinks life is funny. He's a pit bull, and he's not mean. He'll let the children do anything, and he still thinks things are funny. Our dog is getting older now.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
Our dog is getting older now.
That's true. That's true.
This Jonathan Richman song is from the compilation Colors Are Brighter. Okay, you've all been good dogs. Yes, you have. And it's time for your treat. Turn up that volume and toss your dog this audio bone. Here's Dee Mae Roberts with a cat bath.
Give a cat a bath?
Give the cat a bath?
Give a cat a bath. You got to be...
Give a cat a bath. You got to be kidding. Can I get a bath? Yeah. And into the water.
Well, the cats don't like to be washed. They scratch, you know, and they bite if they have a chance. You know, it's normal for a cat. They're extremely nervous.
Drops into the water. Oh, don't worry, baby. Here we go. Okay, just lather her up a bit. Oh, sweetheart.
Bath, bath, bath.
This is all up front. They love water. They just don't want too much.
But they say you're not supposed to give a cat a bath. I don't know. Unless it's actually infested with fleas. And they have, what are they, flea dip or something?
They don't like it too well. But it works. It's quick and easy.
Okay, she's trying to climb out now.
Grab him by the tail and switch him around the water and throw him out.
No, you put a towel down in the bathtub and put the water in, and then you stick the cat on the towel and it gets its claws stuck in the towel.
I think that it really interfered in the feelings of love that our cats had for us.
Dee Mae Roberts' work is at storiesfirst.org. David Greenberger runs duplexplanet.com. And the late, great Tony Schwartz, the world's foremost sound recordist, is online at tonyschwartz.org. I'm Barrett Golding. Links to all the producers you heard in this hour are at hearingvoices.com.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. Our producers are Scott Carrier, Ann Hepperman, Larry Massett, and Kara Oler. Our intern is Max Darum. Mix engineer is Robin Wise of soundimagery.com. Executive producer is Barrett Golding. From NPR, National Public Radio, this is hearingvoices.com.